The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
We're so glad you've stopped by. Welcome to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. Come indulge with us in the next hour as we explore a region of the world, its wine and spirits. We'll also talk about food, tours, and other amenities unique to this area. Sit back and enjoy. Now, here's Kimber Stonehouse.
Hello, and welcome back to Around the World in a Glass. Last week I talked about rosé. Not pink wine. Sometimes it can be called pink, but I differentiate rosé and pink wine. It's kind of my little fun way of doing it. Pink wine being the sweeter styles, things like white Zin, white Merlot, those kinds of things that have a lot of residual sugar. There's nothing wrong with those wines if those are what you like to drink, but those are quite different than a European-style rosé, a dry rosé. I sparked a couple of questions. One of them that I just wanted to toss out here at the beginning today so I don't forget to answer it, and it was, have you ever been fooled by a rosé, meaning that a red wine was actually a rosé, or the opposite, that it was a rosé and I thought it was a red. I think that's the opposite way. Anyway, the answer is no. But and I have to qualify that, though, because I don't know if I've been – if someone has tried to fool me, and I was fooled, so I don't actually know that I was fooled because they didn't, you know, tell me the joke was on me, or if it's just been really obvious – for the rosés that I have had in the past or the red wines that I have had in the past, they have been just blatantly obvious as what they were, because that is also perhaps a part of it. I don't tend to drink rosés that are dark enough in color to be a red wine, and I don't drink a lot of red wine that is, you know, light enough in color to be confused with a rosé. So it could be that I just haven't had the right bottle to try and confuse me. Either that or I was so completely fooled that anyway, I still don't know it. So thank you for the question that came out from our listener in Chicago. And I thought it was kind of a fun question. So anyway, today we are going to talk a little bit about vintage. Well, actually a whole lot about vintage. It's a question I get asked a lot at the store, over the phone, from friends, from family members, kind of from anybody who has an interest in wine. And it's the new wine drinkers. Especially the really new wine drinkers, sometimes they get really obsessed with that vintage question. And so as a retailer, as someone in the wine business, I get a little frustrated because they're looking for a specific vintage. And that vintage is, you know, 3 years old. Well, it's a drink now wine, and they don't understand the concept. So today I thought we'd talk a little bit about vintage, talk about why it matters. Does it matter? Because some people... And kind of all over the board, actually, and doing some extra reading and some talking to people in the business and stuff. You know, people are kind of all over the board on how much vintage matters. We're also going to stray a little bit into a topic that I've hinted at a few times and we've never really covered anywhat in depth. And we're going to talk a little bit about aging wines because, you know, sometimes people just want to know how to do that. That's a little bit different as well. So we're going to talk about aging wines and vintage today. So vintage, what is it all about and does it even matter is kind of the topic for today. All right, we're just going to jump right in. So if you live here in the States or if you're used to drinking, we're going to start with a problem. There we go. That was my thought today. We're going to start with this problem that we're having in the store. There's a specific wine that is not a favorite of mine, but it is very, very popular. Okay, we sell it cases at a time. We probably sell, I would say, a case every other week or maybe a case every week depending on the time of year. And at this time of year and at Christmas time, we sell a lot of it. And it is a California wine. And our customers are coming in and they're frustrated because it's always on the shelf at Sportsman's. All right, we might have it not on the shelf because we ran out on Friday night and didn't get any ordered until Tuesday. But we have been out of it now for about 5 weeks. Okay, and there's no end in sight until the next vintage is released. So we're getting a lot of customers coming in, and we're not the only ones. I know other stores are dealing with it too because there's just none to be had of this wine. Okay. I'm not going to name it because I also said that I didn't care for it. So I'm not going to name it. But I will tell you it is a California wine. And usually it runs out between vintages. It is a white wine. So it's a Chardonnay, to be quite specific. It's a Chardonnay. We rarely run out of it for very long. Sometimes at the end of the summer, we'll run out of one vintage before the new vintage is released, and there'll be a 2 or 3 week time delay, all right? We haven't had it now for 5 weeks, okay? The new vintage won't be released until at least probably July or August unless they release it early, all right? I'm told I may or may not get any more of the current vintage, which is 2011. All right, so people that only drink this wine are having difficulty finding it. Why? It's California, right? There's a ton of wine in California, and surely everybody makes a ton of wine every year. Well, that's not accurate. 2010 in California and 2011 were both really, really what we call lean vintages. Okay, they've had a pest that they're fighting in California, and with some success, which is fantastic news. They have had some of the worst possible weather you could have back to back in California. All right. I consider California I have said it here on the air before. If you can't make good wine in California, you need to go back to your day job, because California has really great weather and great climate, great soil, all of it combined together. California is an amazing place to grow grapes. And if you're a winemaker or a vineyard, you know, you're the one who works in the vineyard, that's your job, and you can't produce good grapes out of a climate and soil that is that lush, then really, I mean, think about it. If you can't do that there, I'm not saying you're making a $100 wine. I'm saying you're just getting really good grapes and you're making good wine. If you can't do that in California, there's a good chance you can't do that anywhere, because the climate, as a rule, the climate does not get much friendlier than it is in California. And then you've got the beautiful, rich, lush soil that is filled with, you know, every kind of, you know, 14 or 15, I think, different types of soil, according to the Geological Society, how they classify it. It's huge, all in one location. Okay, so if you can't make good wine there, maybe winemaking is not the thing for you. Now, that is not to say you don't have to be selective about your grapes, that the climate can't be not your friend 1 year, which is obviously the case, and the vintage be lean. Okay, so what does that mean? All right, I'm trying to make sure I'm not talking in words that I don't stop and explain. Okay, when think about, I don't know, if you've ever had a garden. You know, we used to plant tomatoes when I grew up in the Midwest. My mom and dad had about half an acre that they put tomatoes and green beans and corn and all that kind of stuff on. And so, you know, nothing like fresh, ripe tomatoes out of the garden in, you know, August. Fantastic, right? They're sun-kissed and hot and, oh, just amazing, those tomatoes. So think about years where you can't, well, sometimes you can irrigate, so you can add water if it's a drought kind of year in the Midwest. Or the years that it just doesn't get very warm. Sometimes, or maybe your tomato plants just weren't very healthy when you started out and they didn't quite, you know, do what they needed to do. So you just get a few tomatoes instead of what you usually get. I mean, 1 year we got enough tomatoes that my mom canned tomatoes and she made spaghetti sauce. All right, it's the only year she ever did it, because I think she used an entire bushel of tomatoes to make 10 jars of tomato sauce by the time she got done cooking them down. It was really good, really good pasta sauce. It was fantastic. But her tomato sauce, it took a lot of tomatoes to make the tomato sauce the way she did it. But other years we would just get enough for the table and, you know, maybe a couple of really great boxes up for, you know, bags or whatever for some neighbors. But and then other years we're canning them like nobody's business. Okay, that's the difference between a lean year, the year we had just enough for the table, and, you know, well, okay, so we had a lot for the table. We ate them 3 meals a day, but, you know, not enough to think about canning or trying to preserve them. You know, that would be the difference between a lean year and a year that just had a huge crop. If you think about apples this last winter, apples season, the apples coming out of different areas have been hit really hard because of the weird weather we've had, the colder weather, the weather at the wrong time, you know, either freezing or, you know, snow or too much rain. You know, all of those things factor any type of produce, anything that we're growing. And this year has been really hard on apples. And so the apples coming into the restaurant there for a couple of weeks were really kind of poor quality. And, you know, and I mentioned it to my head chef, and he's like, yeah, it was just a rough apple year. You know, and so we changed the ones we were buying and tried to buy ones that weren't as what they call mealy, you know, where they're really, they're just kind of wrong. I can't stand apples that are like that. I like my apples really crisp. Same thing has happened before with grapes. We had a time last summer or last spring where the grape prices just went through the roof. I mean, when we're buying them for the restaurant and we're paying $4 a pound, that's a lot of money for grapes. I don't pay $4 a pound at the grocery store. And here we are buying them wholesale, and they're costing that kind of money. All right, so that's the understanding of vintage, okay? The vintage can be a lean year, or it can be a bumper year, okay? So that's part of it right there. So what's happening in the ground with the weather? What kind of grapes are they getting? Are they getting a lot of grapes, or are they getting just a few grapes? All right, so what happens is sometimes it'll freeze. Australia had that happen in 2006 when I was there. They had just come off of a major frost that was unexpected as they were heading into springtime. And, I mean, there were big sections that were just black. And I asked the question then. I said, so next year, will these vines automatically come back? Or is that portion of the vine dead forever? And the answer I got, because it was such a devastating frost, was we'll find out a year from now. You know, because some of them obviously weren't coming back this season, not with the way the vines looked. Some of them had already tried to, you could tell they were stunted from the frost, but they were already starting to try to come back. Others, there was nothing going on. And that was the answer. All right. Well, that's a huge loss. I mean, we were looking at some of those vines, and they were looking at 20 to 30% of their vines have been killed by frost and may come back next year, but that meant this entire year, they are already, before the grapes even get on there, before berry set even happens, okay, we're talking they are just now looking at growing the vines. Before anything else happened, they had already lost up to 30% of their crop. That is huge. You take 30% out of my paycheck, I'm going to be ticked. Okay, and that's what happens. So that would be considered a lean vintage. Okay, so there's just not as many grapes, okay? And that can be due to weather, that can be due to pest, that can be due to all sorts of things, those two being the biggest two, all right? Sometimes, you know, they'll have torrential downpours when they're trying to harvest. And so what happens? The fruit rots on the vine. It's ripe, it's ready to be harvested, and then it pours for, you know, a week, or it pours for 3 or 4 days. Well, the grapes are going to go from ripe to moldy in a blink. And moldy grapes make really bad wine, just so you know. Unless, of course, it's that botrytis stuff that makes really great dessert wine. But overall, mold is not what we want. So those are the things that would cause the vintage to be lean. Not many grapes picked. So instead of getting, you know, so many truckloads of berries, they're getting, you know, one truckload of berries. So that, of course, we press those same grapes then into wine. They still have to be picked through and pick out the good ones. And your really good producers, they're going to pay attention to the good ones. All right, so now back to my story about this wine we can't get. 2010 was a lean vintage. There wasn't much wine produced compared to other years. Does that mean that there's no wine coming out of California for 2010? No. We've had some of your better producers, and we're going to talk about that word, that qualifier word that I just used, the better producers, they really got picky. There's a cab that we have had almost year-round on the shelf, Paul Hobbs, amazing bottle of wine. All of his wines are good, by the way, whether you're talking his California projects or whether you're talking all the amazing stuff he does in Argentina. I think everything that man touches just turns to amazing in a bottle. Not all of them do I love, but most of them are really, really good. Everybody picks and chooses which ones they like better, but his wines are just always stellar quality. Well, we have this cab that we keep on the shelf called Cross Barn. It's one of his entry levels. It's about, I don't know, $45 on the shelf, something like that. We went through the entire Christmas season with that wine on the shelf. And this is one of our big movers. We never put it on sale because we get no discounts. So Paul Hobbs stuff just doesn't tend to go on sale. But, you know, we went the entire Christmas season without it. In fact, I think we have been up to about 2 weeks ago. We had probably not had that particular cab on the shelf for probably 4 or 5 months because it was a lean vintage. And so Paul Hobbs, he had probably a decent amount of grapes, but he also was very picky. He wants to make sure his winery people know to make sure that the quality is there, that he's not sacrificing quality trying to get quantity. So what some of those producers will do is they throw off a lot of grapes. They pick them, they throw them out, they trim them when they're not managing very well. So throughout the season, they go through and they pick off some of the bad grapes or some of the ones that are too tiny. Even when they already know it's going to be a lean vintage, they will throw out and just throw them onto the ground is usually what they do to trim off the bad or the underdeveloped or the, you know, the grapes that are just taking the energy away from the grapes that are already great. Okay, so those little baby grapes that you get on your ones you buy at the grocery store, and they're really sour sometimes, right? When you get to be an adult, you don't eat as many of those as you did when you were a kid. But the bigger ones are really sweet and rich. So what they do in the vineyard is they go through and hand pick off the little babies and let them refertilize next year's vines and grapes. Okay, so they go through and they pick the big fat grapes are the ones that they want to make into the wine because those have the best flavor. They don't have that bitterness or that sourness that those little ones do because those are not good characteristics in your wine for it to be really, really bitter from the skins that are, you know, just too bitter or really, really tart or sour. So the leaner vintages means that they trimmed the grapes, they just took the good ones and left the baby ones or the not so great ones behind, and they only made the wine that they had great grapes for. So instead of getting, say, 10,000 cases, maybe they only got 4. Okay, now keep in mind that Paul Hobbs has a really good following, especially like, well, we're one of the many, right? So his Cross Barn, all of a sudden, I can't get any. In fact, later I get some, and I'm told I may not get any more because the people that I buy it from can't get much. Why? Because he didn't make very much in 2010. So when it ran out last fall, and you're waiting on the next vintage to come out, it does, but it comes out 4 or 5 months later, it was also a lean vintage. So when it runs out, we're still going to have another nice long gap before the 2012, which was a much bigger vintage, is going to be available. So if you're seeing your favorite wines skip vintages or not have a lot of wine, like this Chardonnay that everybody keeps coming in and hounding us for, is just not on the shelf, that's why when you have a short vintage, when you've had many, many, many vintages, I mean, this Chardonnay I'm talking about, you'd know the name first of all, but this Chardonnay is huge. They make, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of cases of this wine. And for it to have a short vintage in 2010, followed by a short vintage in 2011, it just means the wine's not going to be available. Because instead of, say, if they make a million cases, they've made 500,000 2 years in a row. But they always sell out of that million before the next one's released. So you've got a million over 2 years instead of basically 2 million. So that's what a lean or a short vintage is. It just means they didn't produce as much wine, either because the grapes were poor quality or there weren't enough grapes, even to throw into, you know, something that's more mass produced. So that when the winemaker's trying to keep some integrity, the vintage is going to really hurt when there's just not as many grapes. All right, we're going to keep talking a little bit more about vintage. We're going to talk a little bit more about aging wines, too, when we come back. Be right back.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
News. Opinion. Passion.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
Alrighty, so we're talking about vintage this week. And so far, I mainly talked about the fact that California has had two lean or not very big vintages in a row. So if you're looking for your favorite California wines on the shelf and you're having some trouble finding them, whether they're inexpensive or whether they're really expensive, that could be part of the problem. When you have a, you know, a short vintage and you follow it with a second short vintage, it just means that, you know, the wine's not going to be as readily available. Even for the people who make the mass-produced wines, not enough grapes is not enough grapes. You know, there's just kind of nothing you can do about that. It's frustrating, but I take it as an opportunity to try something new. There you go. I love to reach out and try new things. Especially in the wine, but kind of in all aspects of my life, I'm constantly looking for new things and new interests. And I think it keeps us younger if we keep trying new things. We don't age quite as badly, maybe. I don't know. We'll say that quietly. I don't want to broadcast that. Anyway, so what else does vintage matter? How else does vintage matter? Because people really get obsessed about it. I had a customer ask me for a 2008 of a particular wine that runs out every year before the next vintage is released. Okay? Every single year. And I just have to tell you, we're on 2011 right now. And it'll be here another couple of months, maybe six more months, and then it will run out before its October release date. It always runs out, sometimes a month before, sometimes 3 or 4 months before. It's California wine. It's a 2011 lean vintage. So we'll see if it runs out before or not. But he asked me for the 2008, and, you know, all I can do is to call back and say, you know, good luck finding it. I'll be happy to get you the 2011 because we don't keep back vintage on most wines, okay? We don't keep back vintage on many wines. Some wines we will have a back vintage of, but it's more kind of a one-off. It's not a whole case. It's not several bottles of it. So we're going to get into a little bit more talking about vintage and how come it does matter. Now, I've talked about the leanness and being a short vintage or not having as much availability, but people in, you know, you see a lot in the media about this is a good vintage. This is a great vintage. Oh, this is a mediocre vintage. Or as they did one year, some of the big name wine reviewers came out and they panned an entire vintage. They said that everything coming out of Napa Valley in, I believe the year was, I'm positive, it was 1998. I don't remember the reviewers. I'm not going to throw stones there. But it was a vintage that was totally panned. Okay, it was just, oh, this vintage is terrible. And it came off of the 97 vintage, which was highly touted as being one of the best vintages in years and blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. I mean, if you really want to know, you can go back and read the actual stuff because I'm sure you can find it on Google. It was a really big deal when it happened about 10 years ago. So what happened was everybody was buying up the 97s like crazy. Okay, and still now, we have some 97s on the shelf, some things that have been aged well, a bottle here or there that we thought were pretty cool. And sometimes when I order from wholesalers, I can get some 97s because, it was highly touted. It was an ageable vintage. It's going to last for 15 years, blah, blah, blah. You know, you get the idea, right? And 98 came out, and it was, you know, it was terrible vintage. Basically, it was kind of even – it wasn't quite said this way because, you know, a wine reviewer probably wouldn't be so crass. But it was more like don't waste your money. Don't waste your money or your cellar space. That's how bad they treated the 98 vintage. So about 6 years ago – we had some 97s and some 98s at Sportsman's. And we decided to do a taste test. And we opened up one of each. And, you know, I got to be honest with you. The 97 was really kind of mediocre. In fact, my personal opinion of that bottle, and this was – we picked some decent bottles, okay? We weren't just picking, you know, the average $10 bottle of wine from a 97 and a 98. We were picking things that have, names to them. So that is one of the rules if you're going to age your wines, is to pick a wine that you love and that you know that they have some quality, that they're doing a quality job, okay? So anyway, I don't remember the two that we tried side by side. I don't remember the names of them. I remember a few that I had later that were 98s and amazing, but we tried some 97s and some 98s from California. And the 97s, as a rule, were just kind of mediocre. Certainly didn't have the age worthiness that they were touted to have, okay? And I'm going to explain why I think this, because I think we've just had the same thing happen a few years back. So I'm going to explain it. We tasted the 98, and it was kind of a, oh, my God, this is fantastic. This is absolutely amazing. And we were stunned, right? Because, I mean, I am not a master somm. I am not a major wine reviewer. I just know quality wine when I try it. And I know wine that has aged well and wine that has not. I've had a lot of both from my own little collection as well as helping other people drink their collection. So the 97s, and we tried them again. Okay, so we didn't just take that one tasting because wine as it ages goes through stages. Okay, so sometimes it'll go through what we call a funky stage. Or that's kind of our way of classifying it as being just kind of not right now. Taste it in 6 months. Oh, yeah, it's really good. Okay. And every time we tasted the 97s, we were like, eh, it's all right. But, man, I'm glad I didn't put a whole lot of money in those when they were first released because they just weren't as good as they said they were. All right. The 98s, however, that were totally panned as being not age-worthy, not, you know, whatever they said about the 98s, because it wasn't very nice, they were really good. They were really good. So what does this mean, that the critics are always wrong, that the reviewers are always wrong? Well, no, that's certainly not what it means. What it means is, first of all, you have to know what you're looking for, and the reviewers and the critics should know, okay? But sometimes they aren't looking for what I'm looking for. The other thing is, they taste that wine right after it's been processed and maybe some barrel aging, okay? I mean, there's wines that I've tasted 5 years of, and three of the five were in the barrel still. You know, it is the coolest thing in the world to taste it from five different vintages back to back, and three of them are still in the barrel being aged and not bottled yet, and then the next two are from the bottle. It is very cool, but you also notice the nuances of the vintage and the what barrel aging does to the wine in the first place. So, you know, when you taste, say, 04, 05, 06 out of the barrel and 03 and 02 were in the bottle or whatever you did, you're going to notice a difference the longer it's been in the barrel. And then you're going to notice that difference than when you taste it in the bottle. But there's still vintage variation. That's the beauty of it. You're always going to have vintage variation, whether it's vintage, you know, oh, wow, fantastic vintage, or, oh, kind of lean, or, you know, the grapes, just there weren't that many of them, and there's a little, you know, it's a little lighter bodied than normal. This is usually a more medium to full bodied wine, and it's a little lighter bodied. You notice that a lot in Oregon Pinots. And sometimes, you know, they're real pale in color because it just wasn't a good year. And so the grapes, because it's a thin skin grape, not as much skin grew on the grapes. So there's not as much color in the glass and not as much depth and complexity sometimes is how it tastes. Other times it has the opposite effect, that you get more complexity and more acidity than you do on the ones that are fruitier. So if you get lusher grapes, you get more fruit, more jam. And on the leaner years, sometimes you get more complexity, more elegance, or sometimes more minerality from the soil because it just comes through in the grapes more because they're not as fruity and sweet as they often are. Okay, again, go back to my comparisons of tomatoes and actual grocery store grapes and, you know, the big juicy ones versus the baby runts that you don't eat once you get smart enough to realize how sour they are on the grapes especially. So that would be the difference, again, on your wine, all right? Because those grapes, particularly those grapes at the grocery store, they don't make great wine. But, however, they're a great example for us as to the flavor profiles that come out in the wine and how it comes out in the wine. All right, so sometimes you'll end up with what we call the lean vintage versus the huge big vintage. And then sometimes you'll have vintages where the critics and the wine reviewers say, wow, this is going to be awesome, buy a whole bunch and age it. And then, you know, 4 years down the road, it's like, whoa, what happened to my wine? It's kind of flabby, doesn't have a lot of structure. And sometimes it's because it was more jammy and fruity, and it didn't have the key component that I find for aging wines. One of the biggest components is acidity. Because as that wine ages, the fruit and the sugar, the fruit and the jamminess, not necessarily sugar, but fruit and jammy, that's going to kind of fade away. And then your secondary flavors, which sometimes for, especially for cab, are going to be tobacco and chalkiness and chalk and chocolate, leanness, flintiness or minerality, a lot of those will come back, come through. Sometimes even for some people, it gets to be a little bit of earthiness, dirt or mushroom. Those secondary flavors and sometimes even tertiary flavors kind of move forward and the fruit kind of comes back. And for me, the wines become more integrated. They kind of become more tightly woven. Instead of when you tasted it, you have fruit and everything up front, and then you have some acidity, and then you have the tannin. It kind of, as they age, it just kind of all becomes one integrated thing. It's kind of like a really great piece of artwork that you don't look at and say, oh, there's purple and there's some green. And oh, look at that really pretty sun right there. It's nice and yellow. You look at it and you say, wow, Turner did an amazing job at creating this entire picture because it's all so tightly woven, you almost don't see the individual pieces. And to me, that's what wine does as it ages. It becomes so integrated that you don't hear the individual pieces. One of the hardest things I had to do as a music major for me in college and even a little bit younger than that, one of the things that just for a while was hard for me, not hardest. I had a lot of hard things, and this one wasn't that hard. But when I listen to music, I listen to music. Okay, I listen to the music. I don't have it in the background. I sometimes have it in the background, but I tend to be a listen-to-music kind of person. No matter what kind it is, whether it's rock, pop, classical, jazz, whatever, I listen to the music. In college, we had to sit down, and in high school, we sat down a few times and did an exercise where you named the different components of the orchestra. All right, and you're probably laughing on the other end of this, thinking, why you can't do that? Because I heard the piece as a whole. I would get wrapped up in the music as a whole symphony. It was very hard for me to hear it in individual instruments because to me it was a composite. It wasn't something to break apart. So I had to learn, I learned, of course, to break it apart, and I'm quite good at it, but I still don't choose to do that. When I hear music, I'm not like, wow, that was incredible drum section. Did you hear that drum section? Wow. Or, ooh, did you hear the bass on that? Unless it's really flat, amazing. Or if it's a jazz piece where they're kind of hopping through solos. I see wine as the same thing. When it's young, first bottled, first shipped. And not that that's not good, because I do like them that way. I drink a lot of wine that's, you know, brand new in the store. So I'm not saying that that's not a good thing. But as the wine ages, for me, it becomes more complex and more integrated. Like those symphonic pieces where you're sitting there trying to figure out, was that the first or second violin? And was that the viola? Seriously? You know, and trying to figure out those kinds of things. Sometimes it just, the components become so integrated that it's no longer, oh yeah, there's the, there, right there. Did you get that black currant? Oh yeah. And that hint of licorice. Did you get that? Oh my goodness. That was some wonderful cassis. You know what? To me, they become so integrated that you don't pick out the different aromas and the different flavor profiles as easily as it ages. All right. Just my opinion. All right. So aged versus current vintage. I've kind of talked a lot about that, I think, just now. Why do we age wine? You know, why is that such a thing? Well, you can age it for two different reasons. Okay, there's two reasons you age wine. One is because you really, really think they taste awesome after you've sat on them for 10 years and decided to open and share it with some of your best friends. Okay, that's the main reason. I love wine that it has that integrated and just that what happens when the wine ages. And I happen to love that. Okay, I don't have the patience for that a lot of times, but I happen to love how the wine becomes different as it ages. All right. What is aging? Aging is the gradual oxidation of a wine. Okay. So it is gradually through the openness of the cork because it's porous. The glass is not, but the cork is. It will gradually age. Okay. So gradually little thin, little bitty bits of oxygen get through, little bitty bits of oxygen come back out. Okay. So it just kind of breathes just lightly through that cork. And then after you age it for however many years, you can handle being patient, which I have a really hard time with that concept. So they don't always make it as long as they should. But once you decide it's time to open them and drink them, you can decant or filter depending on if it's filtered or unfiltered. And, you know, there's a lot of variations there, and we're not going to go into that because it really tends to be wine-specific or producer-specific or age-specific. And I don't want to tell you a bunch of things to follow there, and then they're wrong. It really needs to be specific to the wine that you're opening as an aged wine. So you decide to age wine. That is one of the reasons. The other reason some people age wine is they buy vintage-specific. They age it in a proper cellar, either a proper cellar or a proper rental unit or whatever, depending on how much space they have. And then they want to resell. Okay, that is not necessarily legal or illegal, for that matter, in all states in the United States. So some people do it, though. They buy it. They sit on it for, say, 5 years, and then they resell it because their idea is to buy it on what they call futures, buy it on guesses, and then sell it once it's left the market and nobody can buy it anymore. So some of the wines that have done that, 03 Bordeaux, 05 Bordeaux, they have done that on both those. I think 09 Bordeaux. Some of your Burgundies, your really, really high-end Burgundies that I've mentioned last summer and previously on the show, DRCs and some of the really high-end Burgundies, people will do that with those as well. Chateau Petrusse, they'll do it with that one. So there's a handful of them that just jump out and grab you as ones that people want to buy if they can even get their hands on them. They want to cellar age them in the perfect temperature so they have a fantastic provenance, okay, because they have to have provenance to be able to be resold. And then they send them to an auction house, preferably one of the really awesome ones in New York City. They send them to an auction house, and their hope is to double their money or at least make an incredible return on investment. You know, 20% is a really good return on an investment, especially if it only took you 5 years to make 20%. Yeah, that's a good investment. All right, so if your reason is to just to age them because you want to age them and drink them, like me, then you know what? Then you need to be palate-led and not so much wine critic-led. Okay, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to run out of time here and have to go to break, but we're going to talk about how to be palate-led and how to pick out the wines that you love to drink that might, and I do say might, be age-worthy. Okay, if you're buying them to resell them, again, check your liquor laws so you don't get in trouble for bootlegging. Okay, just a word of caution there. Check your liquor laws. But if you're buying them to resell them, then you need to be really doing your research. Okay, you need to be checking your vintages, but not just what the critics say, but also what, you know, the winemaker says. You need to make sure that the brand name or the chateau name that you're buying and aging is going to have resale quality, that they're already known to be resold. Okay, so Google is your friend here. WineZap, WineBid, Wine.com. There's all kinds of really cool websites where they do those kinds of auctions. So if that's what you're looking to do, you want to age your wine, then hopefully you either have deep pockets and a nice cellar, because you're going to need both of those, and then check out your liquor laws and see. So that's kind of a different kind of person. I'm the kind of person that just likes to drink them once they've had some age on them because I think it's cool how the wine changes. And that's kind of more where we're focused. I kind of stay away from the other side of it because that's not where my heart lies. The majority of my customers are buying to sit on, and then they're going to drink them later. So the majority of the people I interact with are either enamored by the idea and don't understand the differences in the flavor, or they're people who already buy and age wine in their own cellars and then share them with the good friends or good family members when, you know, 5 or 6 years down the road or 10 years down the road, okay? All right, we are going to go to break one more time, and I am going to wrap up here today and talk about how to pick the wines that you think will age well, or at least how to start. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. When you look at something that's been designed, whether it's clothing, architecture, or a work of art, do you stop and wonder about the inspiration and thought process that went into the design? Tune in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. We'll take the mystery out of the creation process, along with revealing the backstory from art to fashion to travel and so much more. Listen to Dishing the Dirt on Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Tune in every week for Sex Out Loud. Host Tristan Taramino will discuss everything from sexual pleasure to sexual politics. Get an insider's perspective from leaders in the adult film industry, the LGBT community, and the sex-positive world. From kink to non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. Plus, you can call in to join the conversation. Sex Out Loud airs every Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, today it's all about vintage. Does it matter? Why is it important? All right, so if we are drinking wines that are, say, $10 a bottle, $15 a bottle, you know, I call them sometimes the grocery store wines, but we have some inexpensive wines too, and even all the way up to, say, 30 or 40. Most of those I'm not going to age, partly because, like I mentioned, I'm kind of impatient. And I'm going to drink those. They drink well now. Most of those are made. The average American, and I'm going to say American here because I know that we have a lot of listeners from other countries, but the average American, is the results I have, drinks the bottle of wine 2.5 hours after buying it. That's right, 2.5. Yeah, that's pretty precise, right? So if you're only going to age it for 2.5 hours, chances are you don't need a cellar. And chances are, you know, you maybe are already really bored today. Sorry. But if you're like me and some other people that I know, I like to age wine. I like the way it tastes if I can be patient and stay out of it. The majority of the wines are made to be drank now, especially in that $15 to $50 price point, $10 to $15, $15 to $50, I think, would be the high side. And some of those even more expensive than that are made to be drank now. They're not necessarily made to need to age like wines have been in the past. There are wines in the past that, oh, holy cow, you certainly don't want to drink that right out of the bottle after it's been, you know, unless it's got a good 10 to 15 or some 30 to 40 years age on them. All right. They weren't made to drink now. They were made to sit in caves in Italy and age for 25 years before you broke them out to check out how your work was. All right? And I'm specifically talking Nebbiolo, Barolo, Barbaresco, Gattinara. Those are the ones that, I mean, I've had some that have been 35 and 40 years old, and I'm like, oh, holy cow, this could still age more and still have plenty of life. It's still got plenty of fruit and plenty of acidity. This wine could have another 10 years in the barrel or in the bottle in that cellar, and it still would have been fine. But, you know, a lot of our wines are not made to age like that. So what I think is fun, and I've done it kind of inadvertently most of the time, is to have some wines laying around that were that, you know, $15 price point. And, you know, sometimes I have a lot of wine at home. Probably should tell you that up straight. I have a lot of wine at home. Some of it, most of it I've bought just when it was on a good deal or because it was a good vintage or I really liked it. And sometimes I forgot about it. It ended up in the little wine chiller I have or under the bed because, you know, what else are you going to store under the bed? It's empty space. So sometimes I find those bottles. I'm like, oh, I probably should have drank this a long time ago. And I open it up and most of them have been really, really awesome because they're just, again, they're more integrated. But I don't drink wine to be fruity. So I'm not looking for that jammy fruitiness that a lot of people like, say, the Clinker Brick Zin and some of those really bright Zins that have a lot of fruit and a lot of a little bit of residual sugar, but a lot of jam and fruit on the front of the palate. And then some, you know, hints of black pepper on the back and a little acidity along the jaw. But those aren't the kind of wines I like to drink. I tend to drink a little bit more European style with more acidity and less fruit or jam, as I call it. So the wines I like to drink already have a little bit, maybe are a little more austere than what a lot of people are drinking. So that's the first question I'm going to ask you when you tell me you want to buy an aged wine for your boyfriend, girlfriend for their birthday, before Christmas, for Mother's Day, Father's Day, whatever's going on. You want to buy an aged wine for somebody. And you, sometimes, you know, I don't mean to be prejudiced, but I am. They sound really young on the phone. And they think this is cool. Their boyfriend, girlfriend has just really gotten into wine. And so my first question is, have you had any aged wines? No. All right. Well, I mean, and sometimes they're talking about spending a couple hundred bucks. Well, I don't want you to spend your couple hundred dollars, which is not easy to come by at any age, on a wine that you're going to be disappointed with. So I'm going to ask a couple questions. Have you had any aged wines? No. All right, then. Let's do this, and let's, you know, and figure out something that's going to be the right thing for them to drink. Have you had aged wines? Do you have experience with aged wines? If not, then what you should do is put that money toward buying 6 or 10 bottles of the same wine that you really like, and then experiment with aging it. Put it in a cellar and find out what it tastes like a year from now. If you still like it, all right, sweet. You know, a year later, try another bottle. Yeah, it's still pretty good. You know, and taste it and see how it changes over time. I know that's asking you to put a little effort into it and a little time into it. But at the same time, you're really going to figure out how those wines change and what slow oxidation does. The other way you can do it, and it's not quite as effective, but you can use the Venturi decanters and decanters and things like that. And that will kind of oxidize the wine a little bit and help it move on past some of its early fruitiness. But there's a complexity that comes in through the gradual aging process that I think is lost in the Venturi and aerator era. Decanter is one way to do it, but again, you're going to have to decant for several hours. But why do you want to age the wine? And if you're new to wine, you can toy with buying some aged wines, but I wouldn't spend $200 or $300 or even $100. I would find aged wines that are like $50 to $75, or just try things that are a couple of vintages old, because sometimes you can find that at a restaurant, all right, and kind of start to experiment with it that way. Sometimes you can find a wine bar that's pouring something aged, and that's kind of cool too if it's not too much of a fortune. So first, figure out why you're aging it. If you're aging it because you think they taste cool, then, you know, you can do it in a much better fashion than I do. I read in an article years and years ago that if I wanted to build a wine cellar, the way to do it and stay in a budget was to buy 2 bottles of a favorite wine every time I bought. Okay, well, that's almost doable financially, depending on where you're at, right? Instead of buying 1 bottle, you buy 2, and you put 1 in the cellar, and then 1 is for drinking now. Or you can put them both in the cellar if you already have a nice collection at home. So if you have, you know, like I do, more than enough wine to drink now, and you have a budget set aside for aging wine, then you would just buy 2 of a favorite. And then when you decide to open one, you can open it, and then you could open the other one if it tastes great, and this is where you love it and you don't want it to get any more oxidized because this is perfect. Then you would go ahead and, you know, a month or two later, open the second one. Now, the process of aging, you know, you need to have something to put it in. If you're lucky enough to live in the Midwest where you have a good basement or a cellar, then, you know, that's the perfect place for it. And you don't have to do much because it stays about 60 degrees, and let me tell you, it's humid there. If you live someplace like Phoenix, where it routinely gets up to 115 for several months at a time, or at least it feels like it's several months at a time. But the weather, our room temperatures here are hotter, okay? The average room temperature here in Phoenix, and I can't say, but I would imagine some places in California and New Mexico are probably very similar, Nevada. The average temperature in the house here in the summer is going to be 78 to 82 degrees, depending on your air conditioner bill. That's too hot for wine. The other problem that you run into in most of those states is a lack of humidity. Well, what does that matter? Well, the cork is wood. The lack of humidity causes the wood to shrink because the water evaporates out of the wood, which is a porous substance. So what happens is you end up with corks that rot. So all of a sudden, your really great bottle of wine you were aging, whether it was $15 or $20 or whether it was $200 or $400, it doesn't matter. You've taken up shelf space. You've spent money. You've had your patience tested for 2 or 3 years. I want it to taste as good as possible when I open it up. If the cork's rotted, it's not going to taste worth anything except really bad vinegar that I can't even use on my salad. So it's really important in areas with low humidity. Australia would be another place. A lot of places in Australia have desert-like conditions. You're going to need to pay attention to your humidity, because if you're not, you're going to end up with a bunch of terrible wine. And like I said, it's sad on so many levels. I mean, when I've brought one out of my cellar or my little wine chiller, because I don't officially have a cellar, but when I brought one out of my little wine chiller and it's not been a good bottle, it's almost devastating, because now it took up my limited space in there. I spent money on it, usually at least $25 to $150. I didn't drink it for all these years because I knew it was going to be amazing, and now I've opened it and it's terrible. So it's just disappointment on so many levels. So make sure you're paying attention to temperature and humidity, okay? And so if you have like a chiller here in Phoenix or someplace else in desert-like conditions, the chiller is kind of your best bet, because it's going to also keep the humidity inside, just like in your fridge. Trust me, there's plenty of humidity in your fridge too. But that's what you're going to need to pay attention to. And that is also why we put the wine bottles on their side, is because that keeps the cork a little more moist on the end facing the wine. So, again, it tries to prevent and keep the wine, the cork, kind of moist so that it doesn't get – so it doesn't dry rot. If you stand it up, the wine doesn't touch either end of the cork. It just sits down at the end of the bottle, and the cork can dry rot just standing right up there on your shelf cabinets. The other things you want to watch is you can't put your wine in sun, okay? If you have one of those wine chillers, for heaven's sakes, don't put it outside in your garage here in Phoenix. It will not survive the summers. It might survive one, might even survive two. But eventually, it will not survive against the incredibly hot temperatures we would have in our garage. So it really needs to be in an air-conditioned house, but it is to prevent your wine from being stored at 85 degrees or 80 degrees. You can sometimes skate by. I had my apartment, the air conditioner went out, and it was over 95 for 2 days in my apartment. It killed the snails in my aquarium. However, the coral survived. And, you know, my wines, the ones that I've opened up that I had then, you know what, they've been fine. I had them in a dark area that was probably the coolest place in the house, the ones that weren't in the chiller, because they were under the bed. But, you know, and I think that's what saved them. Okay. All right. So reasons to age wine, investment purposes, I do not recommend. But you know what? If you want to do it, go for it. And then just because you like to taste the flavor profile, it changes. How I pick the wines I age, I pick wines with usually bracing acidity and good fruit. Those are probably my two biggest ones. And then I want it to have a nice long finish, because any wine that's good is going to have a nice long finish. So those are probably three just off-the-cuff characteristics that I look for in any wine before I go to age it. It has to have serious acidity, because as it ages, that acidity is going to tame. Well, a good wine is always going to have some good acidity. So if I want to age it for 10 years, it needs to start with some pretty serious bracing acidity, and then some, of course, some good fruit, because again, that is also going to fade. And so if you don't have much fruit or the hints of fruit, then you're going to have nothing but, you know, tannin by the time you get to the end. And that is not the kind of wine I'm looking for to drink. All right. If you have any questions about aging, by the way, I forgot to mention that port and vintage, that's a whole different story. Okay, so that's for another day. Today we're talking specifically about wine. Port, Madeira even, and sherry are all sometimes designated by vintage. We'll have another day where we talk about that style of vintage and that style of aging. The rules are kind of the same, only vintage port is only made in vintage years. Okay, some of your really good wines out of Burgundy and out of Bordeaux, which is where we talk so much vintages in Europe, because it does matter in Europe. A good winemaker can make a good wine every year if he has the grapes. Might not be very much, and he's going to have to be picky. But that's why I follow by producer or winemaker more so than by region, because I think that's where your answers are on what's going to be good and what's going to age well. It's based on your region, your producer, your winemaker, but not just, oh, hey, California had a great year in 2012. Well, I'm not just going to buy any California wine and lay it down. I'm going to be picky and pick the ones that have some fruit, some bracing good acid, and a long finish, because I think that's why the 98s aged better than some of the 97s. The 97s were fruity up front. They were, you know, it was a bumper crop. It was fruity. Same with 2007. Amazingly good wine right out of the bottle. But for aging, give me an 06 or an 08 out of Napa, because both of those had better acidity and more complexity. And I think in time, that's what's going to show well in the bottle. The other one is going to get a little shallow quicker, because it's a wine to drink now. All right. If you have any questions about vintage, aging wine, anything like that, this would be great. I did have another letter that I want to toss out just in case he's listening all the way to the end today from a listener in Australia. And I haven't missed your questions and I didn't miss your book recommend either. I just want to save it for another day. It didn't quite fit into the topic today. So, Bernie, I will be in touch. All righty. Check out vintage. Read a little more about it. And email me if you have a question because this is all about learning, and I love talking about the things that I've experienced and telling you a little bit about what vintage means and doesn't mean and how to age the wine. So hopefully you've enjoyed it today, and you'll start thinking about things that you might want to toy with aging for a year or two. And it's huge the difference that it makes. All right. Until next week, find a great bottle of wine and enjoy. Cheers.
Thanks again for tuning in. Around the World in a Glass is heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Please join Kimber Stonehouse from Sportsman's Fine Wines and Spirits next week for another glass.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.